Hey guys, welcome to the Indie Game Development Podcast. Here we tackle the challenges of indie game development head on, from the technical to the emotional stuff, and talk about the secrets to conquering self-doubt on your journey to crafting games that people will love. Subscribe so you never miss another episode, and if you haven't already done so, give us a rating and review so that this podcast gets shared with more people. We'd really, really appreciate it. Ready? Let's go. Hey guys, in this episode, we are going to take a deep dive on the genius level design of Super Meat Boy. So Ed McMillan makes weird flash art games that are filled with poo and dark humor and taboo topics. And in terms of level design, he is an absolute freaking genius, okay? In case you don't know who he is the creator of most notably Super Meat Boy, The Binding of Isaac, and The End is Nigh. But there is a whole host of other games that he's made, though a lot of them were only made on Flash. Also, if you have watched Indie Game the Movie, which I would highly, highly recommend, by the way, if you are an indie developer and you're wanting to make games, Indie Game the Movie, go check it out. He was one of the developers featured in that game as well, leading up to the development of Super Meat Boy. Also, I think he was the most likable character in that movie. His games are really edgy, they push boundaries, they get people talking about things that they wouldn't normally talk about, and I think that's one of the biggest strengths of his games. For example, in The Binding of Isaac, it's about a boy running from his mom because she's trying to kill him because God told her to. So he's down in the basement and he fights off monsters with his tears. It's really weird and unconventional and very controversial. But before Binding of Isaac, his success and fame started with Super Meat Boy. It is a weird little platformer about a boy without skin trying to rescue Bandage Girl. And this platformer game, along with Mario and Celeste, has gone down in history as one of the greatest platformer games ever created. Now, what's interesting about Super Meat Boy, compared to Mario, for example, is that Super Meat Boy has a very, very, very basic moveset. And it never changes. Mario gets different suits and power-ups that give him different powers and abilities that change how you play the game with Mario. Super Meat Boy is much more simple and pure because your moveset never changes. Literally all you can do is you can walk, run, jump, and wall jump. That is it. What changes over the course of the game are the levels themselves. Right, and obviously this happens with all platformers, but this happens in such a beautiful way with Super Meat Boy. They build on themselves and build on themselves slowly but surely, making players master specific parts of the game and then twisting it around in some way to make the levels even harder. So, for example, the saws. There's a lot of saws in Super Meat Boy. They start off as a stationary hazard placed in the environment, but later he will add movement to them, making them a lot more difficult to avoid. Just a very simple example, right? So how do you do this at a good pace as a developer, right? How do you ensure your players understand all the rules of the game well enough to play such a difficult game? And Super Meat Boy does get extremely hard pretty quickly. So let's dive into his level design and find out and see if we can answer these questions. So I actually played the game and I played all of the levels and wrote down a whole bunch of notes on all of them. So I started right at the beginning with level 1, and I'm embarrassed to admit that I had to Google how to delete my save file so that I could start with a fresh slate for the analysis for this episode. And by the way, I do have to say right off the bat, if you haven't played this game, I would highly recommend trying it out or at least watching some gameplay footage and seeing for yourself how these levels were designed, because it's one thing to hear it with words, it's another thing to actually play it yourself, right? So it starts off really interesting. In level 1, you literally cannot die, unless going off screen counts as a death. I mean, you kind of see a little bit of a particle explosion when you go off screen, so maybe that counts as a death, but in my mind it doesn't because it doesn't seem like a hazard. The only thing that Ed McMillan wants you to master in this level is jumping. And this is like basics of the basics, but he wants to make sure that you understand how to jump before you move on to the next level. Very simple stuff. And you know, it's not just pressing the button. You have to hold the jump button down in order to get up to be with Bandage Girl so that you understand how the variable jump height works. The longer you press the jump button down, the higher the player goes. Again, this is very standard platforming stuff, but just in case, you know, someone who's not familiar with the typical rules of platformers plays his game, Ed McMillan introduced this level to make sure that you understood how the jump works. Level 2, he gives you a little image, right? It's like built into his level. It can't actually hurt you, but he has an image built in that shows you you can die from a saw. And it's very cute, but you can't actually touch the saw. But you can't actually hurt yourself or die in this level either. It's just a little bit of foreshadowing there. In this level, what he wants you to learn is you have to wall jump, right? And again, you cannot die. So that's two levels in a row where you cannot die, and he's just getting you to master basic game mechanics. Level 3 is just a huge gap. The camera doesn't even have to follow the player, that the level is so small. But it is the first time that you can actually die. But it feels pretty inconsequential because you literally just spawn right back at the start instantly. Like, this level is the length of one jump. It's really, really small. But you have to run and jump as high as you can to cross the gap. If you don't hold down the jump button, you're not going to make it. If you don't run, you're not going to make it. You will see a lot of stuff like this in Ed's level design. He'll give you a problem, which, you know, in the case of a platformer, the problem is the level, and you are forced to figure out the solution. Until you figure out the solution, you're stuck. He's not afraid to make sure that you're stuck. By level 3, you've already learned all of Super Meat Boy's movements. 3 tiny levels, and we've already mastered the basics. And as good game design goes, this, and by the way, this, in my opinion, is good game design. As far as good game design goes, games are supposed to be easy to learn and hard to master, and that is very much the case with Super Meat Boy. 3 tiny levels that you can honestly play in the span of about 25 to 30 seconds, you know, for all 3 of them, you have learned all of the moves that exist in this game. The next 2 levels after the first 3 in the game are very important. There's nothing new in them. That's very important. They are simply there to reinforce what you've already learned. Ed really wants to make sure you know how to wall jump and understand running and variable jumping so that you're given more opportunities to practice here. Level 6 is actually the first time we come across something that can properly kill you. That's, you know, not just a hole in the floor. And what's actually really cute is if you pay attention, he shows you exactly what happens when your player touches a saw, because there's actually, if you get close enough, there's a little squirrel that runs into it and dies. I feel bad for the little guy. There's a lot of blood for it. The next 2 levels are more reinforcement. If we didn't already know we could bounce from wall to wall, we are now forced to. Right? Because some platformers, you can only wall jump on one side of the wall. This game is not like that. So you have to do that in these 2 levels while avoiding saws. Now in the next couple of levels, it's really cool how they're laid out, because first we're introduced to these blocks that disappear after we've been standing on them. So you stand on them and they disappear after a second, but we're really unlikely to die because the timing that he gives you is very, very generous. So you can kind of just speed your way through, no problem. But in the one after that, now that you understand how the blocks work, right, he gave you a very, very simple introduction to them. Now you're forced to actually jump and slide down these blocks and make them disappear and then double back and go through the opening that you've just created before you can proceed. It's a lot more complicated the second time around. It's very, very clever level design. Something you'll notice is that this is how Ed McMillan creates his levels. He'll introduce something new, and at first, it's easy to deal with. Then he'll take it and he'll twist it around and make it much harder. Then later on, he'll combine that harder version of that mechanic with other old level mechanics, which makes things even more challenging. Now, this is not only really good level design, it's also just like, it's a really clever thing to do, I think, for indie developers, because you'll notice when you play Mario games, it is not always the case, right? When you play Mario games, they will often have a brand new mechanic in almost every single level, and rarely will they reuse those mechanics in later levels. Now, Mario is made by Nintendo, right? These are AAA games, so they do not have to budget as much as indie developers do. Indie developers, we need to get as much as we can out of every single mechanic. So Ed McMillan, he's not only managing to really solidify the rules of his game in your mind and gradually amp up the challenge, and he does that. He's very clever with it. He does that, but he's also lowering the workload for himself, right? Because if you code in a saw and then you attach that saw to other things that can move, for example, you suddenly open up a whole world of different possibilities in terms of what you can do with that one hazard, which is a saw. All of a sudden, you've got all these different things that you can do with it, as opposed to having to create 10 different hazards, which would be a lot more work, right? So this is a very, very clever thing for indie developers to understand. Now, I made a spreadsheet while I studied the level design of this game that includes new challenges introduced and new hazards that can kill us. And all you need to know is that the first chapter of the game, this Super Meat Boy is divided up into chapters. The first chapter is that all of the early levels are about mastering movement, okay? Giving a ton of reinforcement and practice, while at this point, there are really only a couple of things that can kill us. Right, levels 13 through 17, they introduce new saws with progressing difficulty in each level. It starts off with saws that only move up and down, and then left and right in 13. And by levels 16 and 17, there are saws that are shooting down from above or right at you, and saws that spin on an axis that are strangely a lot harder to avoid for whatever reason. And the next several levels are all reinforcements with progressive difficulties. The same pattern we saw before until we reach the boss stage, which appropriately is a chainsaw. All right, so every chapter has its own boss, and now in the boss level of chapter 1, we have to use everything that we have learned from the past 20 levels, or just about everything. We're forced to speedrun it to avoid death, all while dodging saws and breaking breakable walls and watching all the forest wildlife fight back and throw themselves at the boss, which was kind of introduced with that squirrel that ended up hitting the first saw, right? It all ties together really nicely. And when I look back at the analysis that I put together, it's very clear that the first 10 levels were mostly about introducing new mechanics, and the next 10 were about upping the challenge by throwing more new hazards and things that could kill us, skillfully teaching us how to master our moveset. If we take a quick summary of Chapter 2, you're going to see that it very much follows the same formula. Level 4 introduces a new hazard, fans. Level 8 has you playing in the dark, which makes hazards harder to see. Level 10 introduces a key, and the level after that introduces a key that unlocks a wall of different locks. And you have to avoid different hazards based on the timing of when that wall of locks opens up. And just like Chapter 1, there's a slow drip of new things that can kill you that get introduced. Biohazards are introduced in Chapter 2, but there are still saws so that you know that you're not safe from old hazards either. We actually get enemies in level 7 of Chapter 2, and remember the wall of locks I just mentioned? Well, those walls start introducing hazards to you as well, starting with, you probably could have guessed it actually if you know Ed McMillan at all, it starts with saws, and as you move through Chapter 2, more enemies are introduced, lasers come in at level 16, and a wall of locks that unlocks lasers, making you dodge in a very specific way, in level 18. And then again, we'll have a boss level, which incorporates almost all of these elements that again makes a speed run through the level as the biohazard rises up to kill us. The whole game plays out this way. It's so simple and so effective. It's this slow drip of new challenges and level mechanics that push your move sets and your skills as a player to the next level, while also introducing new ways to kill the player that keeps things engaging, interesting, and challenging for the player. Super Meat Boy is considered one of the best platformers of all time, and as indie developers, it is worth studying how Ed's genius level design combined with such a simple moveset created such an iconic indie gem. That's all I got. If you loved this episode and you haven't already left a rating and review, then please consider doing that now. It really helps the podcast grow and reach more awesome people like yourself. And I gotta say, it is my duty as an indie developer to ask you to go to my Steam page and wishlist our game, Samurado. It's really, really shaping up. We're very, very, very excited about how the development process is going with that game. And if you want to see devlogs that are made by us, you can actually go to our YouTube channel, Sasquatch Beast Studios. We have a YouTube channel that we throw occasional devlogs onto if you want to go check them out there and see how Samurado is doing. But again, go ahead and wishlist the game. Thank you so much, guys.